WHDF WHD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. The Israeli military says its forces are inside Gaza's El Shifa hospital, conducting a precise and targeted operation against Hamas in a specified area. The Palestinian Authority Health Ministry says it holds Israel's raiding forces fully responsible for the lives of medical staff, patients, and displaced people in El Shifa hospital. National Security spokesman John Kirby says the U.S. has confirmed that hospitals in Gaza have been used to harbor terrorists.
We do not support striking a hospital from the air. And we do not want to see a firefight in a hospital where innocent people, helpless people, sick people are simply trying to get the medical care that they deserve, not to be caught in a crossfire.
CBS's Nancy Cordes.
At the White House today, President Biden expressed rare optimism about the potential for a deal to free some of the roughly 240 hostages, including up to 9 Americans who are currently being held by Hamas.
I've been talking with the people involved every single day. I believe it's going to happen, but I don't want to get into detail.
But the Israeli Defense Forces confirmed today that one of the hostages, a 19-year-old female Israeli soldier, had been killed.
In the U.S. House.
On this vote, the yeas are 336, the nays are 95.
And Speaker Mike Johnson's two-step short-term funding proposal is now a step closer to averting a government shutdown this week. It heads to the Senate, CBS's Scott McFarland reporting.
U.S. House vote will fund one-third of the government, including transportation and health programs through January, and the other two-thirds, including the military, through February. But the politics haven't changed much. The prospect of a shutdown and a big standoff come January are growing.
A charter bus filled with high school students was rear-ended by a semi-truck on an Ohio highway, leaving 6 people dead and 18 others injured. It happened on I-70 east of Columbus. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine.
This is our worst nightmare when we have a bus full of children involved in a crash.
3 passengers on the bus and 3 people in a passenger vehicle were pronounced dead at the scene. A leading medical journal is sounding the alarm about the health consequences of climate change. CBS's Christopher Cruz.
We will see across every one of the indicators that we monitor the health hazards increasing enormously.
A report published in the British medical journal The Lancet says if the world doesn't work to minimize climate change, we could see a tripling of the number of heat-related deaths by the middle of the century. Dr. Marina Romanello is one of the authors of the report.
Because of the rising temperature, we are today being exposed on average globally per person to 86 days of health-threatening high temperatures.
The authors say the world is moving in the wrong direction.
This is CBS News.
Make the hiring process work for you. With Indeed's end-to-end hiring solution, you can attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Start at Indeed.com/credits.
Did you
can
know
always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. Earl Ingram.
Clearly, at this point, what is going on in Congress and the importance of the speaker, that's always been a high profile.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wuggehow. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. 96 people in Wisconsin died from domestic violence last year. That's the highest number in 22 years. Those numbers are from the group End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin. Some social workers tell the State Journal they're worried the situation will get worse with looming cuts to federal victim resource funding. There might be trouble ahead for efforts to keep the Brewers in Milwaukee. The state Senate votes Tuesday on an amended bill to pay for maintenance at American Family Field. But as of Monday night, not enough senators support it to pass. Democratic Minority Leader Melissa Agard.
We believe that we can improve upon the bill, and we're going to continue doing everything that we can to make sure that the state of Wisconsin is getting the best deal possible.
That's Agard on Upfront on WISN-TV in Milwaukee. I'm Nate Wuggehout, Civic Media News.
The Bucks beat the Bulls. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks beat the Chicago Bulls 118-109. Packers quarterback Jordan Love was in attendance and witnessed a few milestones. Giannis, with 35 points, hit his 500th career three-pointer. Chris Middleton added 13 to become the Bucks' 5th all-time leading scorer, surpassing Michael Redd. Middleton after the game.
First, salute to Michael Redd. He's been a mentor of mine since
I've came to Milwaukee, took over his number a little bit, but he's been a great person to reach out to from time to time to talk to.
Baseball reports say the Brewers are looking to promote bench coach Pat Murphy as their next manager. In Chicago, Craig Counsell introduced as the new manager of the Chicago Cubs. Counsell says he'd been thinking about leaving the Brewers almost 2 years.
Thought that a new challenge was where I had to push myself. Really, it's about growth.
As Craig Counsell with Sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. It's your hometown radio, refreshed.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear tonight, the wind settling down, a low in the upper 30s to near 40. Sunshine and another nice day tomorrow, a high near 60, low 60s, windy and partly sunny Thursday. Once again at times, we'll see gusts 30 to 40 miles an hour. Currently 57 degrees.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network. You're tapped in to the issues affecting the Valley and all of Wisconsin. Consider us the bartenders of friendly local talk. This is 93.5 The Tap.
Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Hey, did you hear? Not going to be a government shutdown before Thanksgiving. Actually got something. I'm literally shocked. Was not expecting it, but a bipartisan deal to extend the funding of our government. Who knew? Who knew they could do it? It was a 336-95 vote. And, you know, it was Republicans that voted against it. There were more Democrats that voted for it than Republicans. But the Republican leadership, this now going to be interesting. How soon is there a countdown for Mike Johnson's head? When will Matt Gaetz have him ousted? Gonna be interesting to see how this plays out. And that has been the news for a good portion of the day. And it's good stuff. Not gonna tap that down. Happy to see that something functional happened. So thrilled. But over the weekend, we spent a couple of days in Buffalo, New York. I've been a Broncos fan my whole life. So the Broncos played the Bills on Monday Night Football. So me and the kids went up to Buffalo. We shuffled off to Buffalo to see the Broncos play on Monday night. And while we were there, you know, had some great opportunities to, you know, see Niagara Falls, which you have to do. But also we went to the site where Teddy Roosevelt was inaugurated after McKinley was killed in Buffalo. And they have a really nice society funded, it's the National Park Service that funds it. But the house where TR was inaugurated, and, you know, the tour was fantastic and the information was incredible. And I'm probably going to be talking about some of the stuff that came out of this, for the next couple of weeks, because it was one of those moments where the more things change, the more they're exactly the same, whether it was 1901 when Roosevelt was inaugurated, or 2023, the exact same thing. And it's that pitting of the wealth class versus everyone else. One of the questions on one of the displays they had a little interactive displays where you could turn the knob and decide which answer. They asked, you know, if your factory, your cotton mill, were built on a river and a rolling hills, and how would you treat your child labor? You know, would you give them, you know, an extra a window so they could see how beautiful it is outside? Would you give them a picnic if they worked safe for a month? Would you give them an hour of leisure time to go out and play? Those are your options. And every one of the questions that they gave and every one of the answers they gave, none acceptable. But it showed the world that TR was in, and a lot of it is right now, which is why I keep saying we need this generation of Teddy Roosevelt, the trust buster. But we can't do any of that because we've got a news structure that is so badly broken. And, you know, I say all the time that Republicans hate working people. Just look at what they do. And that was on full display today. Because you may remember last week I said, hey, Bernie Sanders, the chairman of the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee, the HELP Committee, they were going to have a hearing today. And that hearing was titled Standing Up Against Corporate Greed, How Unions Are Improving the Lives of Working Families. And they had three very distinguished labor leaders there. You had Sean Fain from the UAW. You had our friend Sarah Nelson from the Flight Attendants Union. And you had Sean O'Brien from the Teamsters there, all to testify on what? Standing up against corporate greed, because each of them are doing that. You know, look at what the Teamsters did with UPS and winning a historic contract. You look at what Sean Fain did with the UAW and with the Big Three, historic contract. You look at what Sarah Nelson's doing and organizing the Delta employees and making the flight attendants respectable. I mean, you're in this world where these are folks who've come to talk about how are we going to make workers' lives better? How are we going to fight for better wages, hours, conditions? How are we going to ensure there's opportunity for working people? And what happened? Mark Wayne Mullen, the senator from Oklahoma, he's had an ongoing tiff with Sean O'Brien. There was the whole dust up, let's have a cage match and let's fight each other. And you know, there's all that stuff. And today that was one of the questions. You know, you stand up and let's fight it out right here, you know, Mark Wayne and tough guy. And O'Brien's like, no, we're here to talk about working people. and that's what our news media focused on. None of the other stuff. Fox News, congressional fisticuffs, UFC in committee. CNN, Bernie Sanders intervenes and stops GOP senator from fighting a witness. Reuters, U.S. Senator challenges Teamsters president to fight during hearing. NBC News, stand your butt up. Fist fight nearly breaks out during Senate hearing with Bernie until Bernie Sanders steps in. And look, we can go down the rest of them. They're all about the same. It's all we heard. It's all you heard. That's it. There was nothing else being reported about what came out of that hearing. Nothing. So you didn't get to hear what Sean O'Brien's testimony was. You didn't get to hear O'Brien talking about the need to stand with workers when they're fighting for better wages, hours, conditions against corporate greed. You didn't hear him talking about my idea of an adopt-a-striker program. He says, look, you know, literally get out there and stand with people on the picket line. My adopt-a-striker plan. And exploitive fishing of businesses. Stop these third-party logistics companies from operating as other companies doing the business of their company for the sole purpose of shielding themselves from liabilities. Amazon being a big part of this, FedEx being a big part of this. You can go down the list, all these temp agencies, all of these gimmicks. How about we talk about that? No. Did we talk about that today in the news? No. Did we talk about the misclassification of millions of workers in this country and calling them, you know, independent contractors when they're really people who do the work of the companies? No, we didn't do that. Did we talk at all about the obscene corporate profits and the obscene CEO pay? You know, he's saying, look, we got to rein in executive compensation. And we got to do it in the tax code, what I've been saying for a long time. And he pointed out from 1978 to 2022, CEO compensation went up 1,200%. By the average working person, 15%. You wonder why you're struggling? You wonder why it's hard to make ends meet? I think it's pretty simple. You got two guys in a room. One of them is a CEO. Who took all the cookies? Who's got all the money? The CEO. In 2022, CEOs were paid 344 times that of the typical worker. Now, you contrast that to 1965 when it was 21 times. We have had a massive redistribution of wealth in this country from the people who work for a living, the people who go to work, punch the clock, bust their butt, to people who sit in the corner offices and point fingers. And did we hear any of this in the corporate-controlled mainstream media? Did we hear any of this? No, what we got was bread and circus. We got, there was going to be fisticuffs. Did we hear about the tax code that literally encourages the kind of inequality that we're living through by giving all these loopholes and all of these special tax breaks for rich people so that they can pay CEOs insane amounts of money? And then, of course, you write it right off. No, we didn't talk about that. Did we talk about the fact that we're subsidizing these corporations with billions of our dollars? Did we talk about any of that? No, no. It was Bernie Sanders who had to break up a fight in the Senate. Did we talk about the fact that we've got to address how corporate America uses bankruptcy laws to screw working people out of their pensions? And I've talked about this before. You know, the reason the right wing is so mad at the Obama years and what happened with the auto industry is all those workers should have lost their pensions. They should have lost their accrued pensions. They should have nothing. And yet we see this going on time and time again, over and over again. And did we hear about that in our corporate controlled mainstream media? No, but that's what O'Brien talked about in his testimony. And it's in his testimony. You can read it. We'll get links out on social media because it is well worth the read to understand what the real issues are and what the real demands of working people should be. We should be denying federal contracts to union busting companies. That's a no-brainer. That should be a no-brainer. If you treat people poorly, you cheat people out of wages, you should not get federal contracts. You shouldn't get our money. If you're a wage thief, you should not get our tax jobs. That's simple. They talked about passing the PRO Act, make it easier for workers to organize, to fight for better wages, hours, conditions, fund the NLRB and OSHA so workers have the right to organize and be protected. Wow, who would have thought of such a thing? And then the part that got me in his testimony, because it played with my weekend in Buffalo, modernize antitrust laws. Stop allowing the concentration of corporate power into the hands of few that harm workers' ability to fight for better wages, hours, conditions. Stop these abusive business models that are set up solely to screw working people and maximize profits. And I know, but Rick, that's what corporations do. Yeah, which is why you need guardrails. And I go back to the Teddy Roosevelt era, who was all in favor of regulating things that needed to be regulated. He was a hands-off guy for the most part, but understood the razor of capitalism is really sharp. You do need to dull some of that so it doesn't roll over working people. And this idea of the square deal, which they made, you know, quite front and center for everybody, not just for the CEOs, not just for the very wealthy, but everyone. Did we hear any of that today? No. What did we get? We got a clown show. We got a clown show from Senator Mark Wayne Mullen from Oklahoma, and we got bread and circus from our corporate-controlled media. And if you don't think Mark Wayne Mullen's stunt was done specifically to change the narrative to ensure that we never talk about what's really important, then maybe we deserve what we're getting. Maybe we deserve the Congress that we have. And maybe we deserve to continue to get cheated. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You know, the idea that politicians talk about a square deal, that you get what you need, that there's opportunity for everyone. I got to tell you, you know, in looking and going through that display that they had in Buffalo, and if you're in Buffalo, literally just blocks from where the shooting happened on Jefferson Street at the supermarket there. I mean, because we ended up going there and it was surreal. But if you have a chance to get there, well worth the opportunity to check that out. Let's go to the phone lines. Got Steve on line one. Steve, how are you?
Yeah, fairly well, and I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, the two big stories are, you know, Kevin McCarthy in the House and obviously what happened in the Senate. You know, the Senate is supposed to be the higher house, the house that's full of adults. And this idea that, you know, that not only that he decided to bait someone else into this. I mean, I guess you could give somebody a little bit of leeway if they tried to bait you. But he came in there looking for basically some sort of ridiculous Aaron Burr nonsense kind of fight. You know, the kind of thing that 200 years ago some idiot might do. But, I mean, for this to happen, and then as you point out, for it to be, you know, the story, the big story of the day, these two confrontations, one between a labor leader and a senator from Oklahoma and the other one between two Republicans who apparently despise one another. And, you know, there was another story. You know, we actually passed, you know, in the House a budget. And, you know, we have averted a shutdown. You know, so, yeah, that maybe should take precedence over what's going on. But, you know, as you pointed out, you know, it's about who delivers the news and who decides what's important. And let's face it, for a lot of people, the whole dry notion of the budget, okay, yeah, well, we passed it, that's fine, but really don't need to cover it as a story. But if you can give me a video of a senator wanting to step outside with somebody, you know, testifying in front of their committee, oh, yeah, let me tune into that. You know, but, you know, we rely on media outlets to make sort of responsible decisions on our part. And because, you know, the airwaves, we gave them to these people, you know, ABC, NBC, CBS, you know, yes, now everything is streamed and now everything is cable television and so forth. But these companies were built on the backs of the American taxpayer. They, you know, long before any of these other entities existed, the vast majority of Americans got their news from public airwaves, whether it was radio or television. And we gave those to them, and they were supposed to behave in a somewhat responsible manner, but not surprisingly, when you had sort of, you know, media conglomerates form and you had mergers and so forth, all of a sudden, surprise, surprise, you know, Disney, that also runs the things like theme parks and theaters and so forth, you know, they're not terribly interested in necessarily talking about the inequities of labor in this country and wealth and so forth, because they don't just own ABC. So if David Muir isn't covering something with regard to the labor scene, yeah, there's a reason why. I wrote a piece way back in the mid-90s about why nobody was covering the 1996 Telecommunications Act. Well, guess why? Why would anybody cover that?
Yep.
You know, what possible benefit would it be to you as a producer or anybody else to go to your boss and say, hey, you know, this is an important piece of public policy legislation, you know, that impacts our industry. We should probably cover it with regard to all of the questionable outcomes. No, nobody wanted to do that. Why? Because it's their industry. There's nothing to be gained there. Nobody's going to say, oh, wow, you did that great piece on our industry. You know, let's go ahead and give you a job or a promotion. You know, so, yeah, you've got to go outside of the bubble. You've got to look into things more, so you've got to be intellectually curious. Otherwise, you're just not going to hear about what happens. And like I said, we didn't get here magically. Every time there has been a movement in terms of workers and average people and just fairness. I mean, no one said that, you know, the average Joe on the assembly line is supposed to make what the CEO makes. But as you pointed out, there was a time when you could see the CEO of your company, the president of your company, at the church where you went. Because, yeah, they lived, you know, a mile away in the nicer neighborhood, but you still lived in the same neighborhood. They didn't live, you know, on the Upper East Side of Manhattan or Bel Air or Newport Beach and so forth in a $50 million home. You know, you're not even in the same state as they are. You know, so we are completely removed from one another. And there's, again, this idea has always been there in this country that the elite are somehow better than the rest of us, that if you make more, that it means that you're deserving of more, and that, you know, that everybody else is just sort of an impediment. And we reached the point, quite frankly, in this country where the super rich have run out of things to spend money on. They're only interested in competing with each other to see who can make more and be in that exclusive billionaire or super millionaire club. and what they can buy and what they can own and all of this sort of thing without once considering, is this healthy for my country? Is it healthy for our democracy? No, apparently we don't care.
Yeah.
You know, I hate the idea that the Washington Post, an iconic newspaper in this country, has got to rely on, you know, the decisions that Jeff Bezos is going to make with regard to what goes in and or not into that paper.
Yeah.
And with all due respect, okay, fine. He made a lot of money. He capitalized on the idea that, you know, you can get things to people very quickly. Great.
Yeah. Except also, hold on. I got to add one thing there. Also, capitalize the great crime, cheating states out of tax dollars.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Because, you know, he said, hey, you know what? We can just bring people everything. We don't have to have a store, physical presence. We don't have to pay local taxes. Yeah, we can deliver things for a lot cheaper. Yeah, go figure. Yeah, you can do that. But the man has no training. In the same way, I don't know why we think Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos or any of these other people. They're bright guys in their own right in terms of what they built. I hold a doctoral degree in political science. No one should consider taking my advice in terms of running a corporation or give me a scalpel and say, go to work, Steve, this guy's got brain cancer. One thing does not translate to the other.
Yeah.
So I don't know why we continue to make these people out to be some sort of gods, as if they're, you know, have some sort of insight. So when Elon Musk tweets out something about public policy in this country, why should you pay attention to him? You should pay attention to him about as much as you should to Kim Kardashian. I mean, being wealthy does not make you intelligent or well-educated.
Yeah, but here's the thing, and you know, I've been talking about the Teddy Roosevelt place we went to. You know, one of the displays they had was, you know, his meeting with Andrew Carnegie, you know, where Carnegie was, you know, evidently supposedly said that, you know, money in the hands of the average person is wasted. You should give it to someone like him because, you know, much better things could be built. You know, you have, you know, Morgan and you have, Rockefeller and you have the robber barons of the era, Jay Goulds and those folks who built big things because they hoarded all the money and didn't pay workers very much. I see that being kind of where we are today, where, you know, we seem to be, the more things change, the more they're exactly the same.
Right. And what they do is they create a mythology about how this country was built. And you can look along the landscape of large eastern cities, and you can include Chicago in there and other places, you know, that were built by people in the late 19th, early 20th century, people who went out and worked for next to nothing. You know, I mean, here, it was the center of the meatpacking business. And, yeah, it built a lot of Chicago, created a lot of wealth. But you know what? At what cost? For generations of people who worked from dawn to dusk, who worked 6 days a week, who had no retirement, who lived in a shack, had no health care. You know, yeah, and we just literally ate up, used up those human beings for generations. And yes, out of that did come an impressive city. And people gave a lot of money to public works and things, you know, that we now recognize today as great things in Chicago and New York and other cities. But yes, but we ate up people's lives doing it. And the question I have is, what is the end goal here? My vision was always that the society should progress to a point where everyone should be able to enjoy a better standard of living with each subsequent generation. But according to these people, no, society can advance technologically and otherwise. But the distribution of wealth, that doesn't matter. If you're working 60 or 70 hours a week, just like they were a century ago, how in heaven's name is society advanced? You pretty much work your entire life away,
yep,
hope to have enough money to retire with some basic standard of living, and then you die. I mean, what life was that? But hey, they can go ahead and shoot themselves into space. So that's important.
There you go. Steve, I appreciate the thoughts, man. As always, good stuff.
Thank you. Take care.
No, and it's important that he brings this up because, you know, I was just, as he was talking, I was thinking about one of the questions on the interactive display at the inaugural site there in Buffalo. And one of the question number one was, you own a factory and a company town where workers rent their homes. A sudden economic downturn threatens business. How can you weather the economic storm? A, provide free health care for workers until times improve. B, offer a bonus to workers with factory cutting cost ideas. Or C, reduce wages to cut costs, but maintain rental rates. And we all know that C was the answer of the time. And I would argue none of these are sufficient ideas, but we know C was the idea of the time. You know, you go to Chicago, the Pullman strike was because you had an economic downturn And Pullman said, no, you're going to keep paying me full rent, even though we're cutting your wages, cutting your hours, cutting you. But my life has to maintain a certain level of security and wealth. Yeah, the more things change, folks. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
CBS News Brief. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby says the U.S. confirms Hamas has been using Gaza's largest hospital.
Hamas operate a command and control node from Al-Shifa in Gaza City. They have stored weapons there, and they're prepared to respond to an Israeli military operation against that facility.
Israel's military says it has conducted a precise and targeted operation against Hamas inside that hospital. The House sends to the Senate a two-part funding plan to avoid a government shutdown. Republican Congressman Hal Rogers.
While a CR is not my preferred method of conducting business, a government shutdown right before the holidays does our nation no good.
At least six people are dead and 18 others hurt in a crash on an I-70 east of Columbus, Ohio. State Trooper Lieutenant Nate Dennis.
That crash in total involves five vehicles. One of those vehicles is a charter bus that was transporting students from the Tuscarawas Valley school system.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jen.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wuggehout. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Leaders with the Universities of Wisconsin are urging lawmakers to release $32 million. They released a plan last week to bolster degree programs to prepare graduates for key jobs, but Republicans still want cuts to diversity offices. UW System President Jay Rothman says a deal's a deal.
We're taking the legislature at their word. They said this was focused on workforce development, and I think everyone in the state of Wisconsin can look at this and say, this is good for our state.
That's Rothman on Capital City Sunday on Channel 27 in Madison. A former Milwaukee police officer is acquitted of homicide charges. A Milwaukee jury on Friday found former officer Michael Mattioli not guilty in the 2020 death of Joel Acevedo. Mattioli says he was only trying to control Acevedo with a chokehold after a fight. He says he acted in self-defense. I'm Nate Wuggehout, Civic Media News.
The Todd Alba Show.
I had tweeted out after the second game of the year, a hot take. I said, by the end of the year, we will see Braden Lock as the starting quarterback of the Wisconsin Badgers. Now, Mr. Mordecai broke his hand. And by golly, not the way I thought it would happen, but Braden Lock has become the starting quarterback.
And another finger on the monkey's paw curls.
Where did you get that one?
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Weather brought to you by Bug Tussle. Bug Tussle, we're out there because you're out there.
Bug Tussle, we're out there.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear tonight, the wind settling down, a low in the upper 30s to near 40. Sunshine and another nice day tomorrow, a high near 60, low 60s, windy and partly sunny Thursday. Once again at times, we'll see gusts 30 to 40 miles an hour. Currently 57 degrees.
Looking for a reliable, fast, and unlimited internet provider? Look no further than Bug Tussle. Whether you're streaming, gaming, working, or learning, Bug Tussle has you covered. Bug Tussle has continued to serve the rural communities of Wisconsin for over 20 years by providing the most reliable, high-speed internet and excellent local customer service. Call 877-227-0924 or visit bugtussle.com to get started. Bug Tussle, we're out there because you're out there.
Hey, son. How are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ed Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Tap into what Chippewa Falls, Eau Claire, and the Chippewa Valley is talking about today. This is 93.5 The Tap. Online at thetap.fm.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, here's one of those things that I'm excited about. This idea that free trade is the goal. I mean, I've been talking about for years, reining in neoliberalism, reining in the open border idea for money and for goods, and, you know, maybe trading a little smarter. And the New York Times had an interesting piece today on the rise and fall of our trade with China and, you know, all of this stuff, and people starting to accept the idea that, I don't know, maybe it's been the bad policy that we've been saying it is. And here to share some thoughts on, well, that and where we go from here, because maybe we've had the grand epiphany. I'm not sure. But where do we go from here? That's why I've asked our good friend Scott Paul to come talk with us. Scott is the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, the website, if you want to check out the work that they do. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, it was great to be with you.
So let's talk about this because, you know, for the last couple of decades, it's been all about free trade. This belief that countries that trade with each other don't fight each other. And then, hey, you know, rice and beans, you know, the person who produces the most rice and the most beans, everyone's better off. That hasn't worked out very well, has it?
No, it hasn't. And it's been interesting. And I'm just going to take a diversion here just for a second, because there was this big piece in the New York Times, and I hope people have a chance to see it, about this evolution of thinking, as you described, on free trade. It was written by a guy named Peter Goodman, who I have no doubt is a good reporter, but in my recollection and all my conversations with him over the last 15 or 16 years, completely missed this, okay? And he wasn't alone. I mean, a bunch of other reporters kind of cheerleaded globalization and kind of were skeptical about the impacts on workers. And so it's nice that now it's kind of mainstream thought that this whole notion of trade as being a win-win for American workers, American consumers, and the same in China has been kind of completely busted, right? And so obviously there's variations of what to do about it and how to go about it. And there's like the Trump bluster, and there's kind of a more measured approach under Biden. There's the let's just trade with our allies instead. There's the let's bring it all home. And so there are a number of different features. And then there's some companies that are still stubbornly clinging to this notion that they can make things in China like nothing's changed,
right,
at all. And Apple comes to mind, although they're hedging their bets a little bit. But there are plenty of companies that are still making big bets on China. And a bunch of their CEOs are going to be meeting with the general secretary of the Chinese Communist Party in just a couple of days in San Francisco to break bread with them.
You know, I've always said you make the things you can, you trade for the things you can't. That's always been my mindset in this. Now, and that goes back to Adam Smith's philosophy, as I understand it as well. Look, everyone can make T-shirts. Everyone can make tennis shoes. Everyone can make cars. There are some things that some places have, you know, different advantages, and you actually trade for those. You just don't buy stuff that you used to make here and is now made somewhere else. That's not trade. That's just buying stuff made somewhere else. So for me, I believe in trade, not what we've kind of begun to call trade. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally makes sense. And I don't think either of us are suggesting autarky, that we should just close our borders altogether and, make do with what we have. And there are some benefits, to having like a supply chain that's integrated throughout North America, because I really do believe that in a country like Mexico, if you raise wages, that they'll buy more American products. I fundamentally believe that. And so it's a, so there should be trade, but obviously the rules matter, how the other country behaves matter. And you're right, there is just this excessive offshoring that eviscerated towns. And many of your listeners are listening to stations from those communities, Rick, and they know firsthand the impact not only at the factory, but also what it meant for the downtown, for the housing market, what it meant for the Little League and the bowling alley, what it meant for families and the disintegration of the social fabric. And so, there's no going back to that, and there shouldn't be. And there should continue to be this reckoning about how it got so wrong. And just my last word about this also is that we should not listen to the people who got us into this mess in the first place.
Exactly.
To explain to us why we have to do it another way. Like, Larry Summers, shut up. Don't want to hear it. Any of these people on the right or the left who claim that this is the only path forward and Biden's making a mistake or Trump made a mistake on this. No, they're totally disqualified. They got this completely wrong. And it's definitely time for a new generation of thought on how we approach this with robust industrial policy domestically and with a worker-centered trade policy that includes tariffs against Chinese products and other safeguards as well, Rick, to make sure that they're not building their economy on the backs of our intellectual property,
right,
as well as our lost jobs.
No, and that brings us to where I wanted to go next, because, you know, I've had a lot of people email me and go, well, you keep touting how wonderful the UAW did in this contract and got workers, you know, these big raises and, you know, all this health care and all this, you know, talking about a 32-hour work week, you know, all this stuff. It's all going to go away anyway when the Chinese EVs come flooding the market. And I'm going, no, you don't allow that to happen. In fact, I understand there's been a bipartisan group of lawmakers who want our trade representative to jack up the current tariffs to ensure that that doesn't happen, because you can't have a key industry like the auto industry just get decimated by China dumping into this country, which I understand, and maybe you know better than I do, and I assume you do, but they've got, from what I understand, they've got millions of cars that are just sitting, they don't know what to do with.
That's right, they do. The Chinese auto import surge is something we've never had to worry about, really. I mean, because it was always way down the road. We didn't have to think about it. But finally, you know, that day is here where we do have to worry about it, because their EV industry in particular has scaled up, built on the back of government subsidies in China, by the way. And the only thing holding it back from the American market right now is the fact that we do have 25% tariffs in place currently against Chinese automobiles, and that, you know, in many cases, those cars can't yet meet U.S. safety standards because, you know, they're built with cheapness in mind, not necessarily with safety.
Just say they're Chinese made.
Well, look, you know, and so there are some, you know, Polestar is a brand that, you know, imports some EVs from China. There's a few others that come in, but it is a tiny, tiny part of the U.S. market now. But BYD, NIO, these might be names that your listeners have never heard before, but they are big global players in EV and their EVs, and their vehicles are in a lot of markets right now outside of China. Particularly in Europe, which, by the way, is it wants to take action. But yeah, these lawmakers, it was the Select Committee on China. Mike Gallagher, Republican from Wisconsin, Rajna Krishnamurthy, Democrat from Illinois, Haley Stevens, Democrat from Michigan, and I think John Molinar, Republican from Michigan, who said to the USTR, United States Trade Representative, let's keep the 25% tariffs. Let's look at raising them. Let's initiate kind of like a proactive trade case before we get this surge of imports coming in. Because as you said, Rick, there's way more automobiles produced in China than they can soak up domestically. And we know what happens. We know we've seen that happen with steel. We've seen that happen with a bunch of other types of products as well. So, yeah, we have to keep that tariff wall up. We have to keep it high. We have to keep investing in our own domestic industry to make sure that we are dominating that marketplace in North America. Because once you hit the auto sector, you have hit the heart of American manufacturing. I mean, one in every nine manufacturing jobs is in the auto sector and manufacturing, and so much else, as I know you can attest, is related to it. All of these, you know, parts shops and what have you. And so it would be totally devastating to have to compete with massively subsidized vehicles that they can sell at a fraction of the market price here in the United States. And what I don't want is a bunch of environmentalists. And look, I'm totally aligned on the climate change goals, but it shouldn't be, oh, let's bring these Chinese vehicles over and we'll be able to scale up our EV market in a hurry. That's not the right way to do this. And we need to resist that siren song, because it would be a death blow to U.S. manufacturing.
Well, thanks for jumping on my next question, because that's where I was going to go next. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Scott Paul. He's the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, their website. Because, you know, I hear a lot, you know, we should allow them in because, you know, we can get cheap EVs to everyone. We can basically give them out, you know, I'm sure you remember the Yugo from the 90s, where they were literally selling them buy one, get one free. Yeah. Buy one so you can have one for parts. They were cheap. Right. Yeah. They did. Yeah. They sold them buy one get one, and you know, they were really garbage, and so I have a friend of mine who does recovery work, and he said, you know, I want them to bring that stuff in because there's going to be a lot of work in getting that junk off the road.
Yeah, well, undoubtedly there would be, and I mean, fortunately, and look, the right way to do this, and the place where we grow this. Electric vehicle revolution in the United States is you got to meet consumers where they are. People like SUVs, people like pickup trucks, build them, right? You know, and let's do it well. Let's make cars that people are going to want to buy, and also find the price point and find the tax credits and all of that and the charging network to build that. The way not to do this, and I'm just, boy, this is just going to, I mean, this is going to sound really cynical, but it would be the easy answer just to say, yeah, let's let millions of Chinese sedans come in and replace other small gas powered sedans in the United States. And it would be in some respects an easy solution, but it would be the wrong one, because it would end the transition to EV vehicles for SUVs, for pickup trucks, and it wouldn't go beyond a certain market segment. You're never going to get there with that. And it would be an enormous mistake and a big market for these giant companies that would like nothing more than to dominate the global automobile landscape and hit that holy grail of it, which is the American market. Yeah. Because, you know, people buy here anywhere from, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 million cars a year. And so it is a massive market that they're eager to get into.
And look, this is where I go back to what we talked about at the beginning. You build and you manufacturing what you can, and you trade for what you can't. We make EVs here.
We do.
We have the ability to make EVs here. We have the ability to make, you know, solar panels, and look, you know, solar panels and the next generation of energy products we have the ability to make here. We don't have to buy from China. This could be a jobs boom that could, you know, grow the working class of this country back to prosperity if we do it right. But, you know, like you said, you know, opening up the borders, allowing them to dump is going to destroy that opportunity again.
Yeah. And we know how the script ends too, because we've seen it in other industries and what happens. And Americans are not going to stomach a massive effort to combat climate change that's built on the back of lost jobs here. It's just not going to be something that is going to be politically supported. It'll have the opposite effect. And so let's get those manufacturing jobs. Let's make sure that we have the right tariffs in place against those Chinese products. And when President Biden is meeting with Xi Jinping, and when we have these other high-level meetings, we need to make very clear to them that we welcome collaboration wherever it's possible, but that we hold them accountable, and that there are no keys to the American market that we're just going to give away like we have in the past. And that there must be some accounting for the unfair trade practices, for the human rights abuses, and for the belligerence that we're starting to see with Chinese military maneuvers as well. I don't want a confrontation, but I think we have to lay the cards on the table. Otherwise, we never get that honest conversation.
Yeah, I don't want a confrontation either, and I don't want a confrontation that I paid for. Just kind of throwing that out there. Lastly, I got to get your thoughts. You wrote an op-ed over at the Sacramento Bee. Wanted to get your thoughts on on Governor Newsom meeting with Chinese officials. You know what? You know, thoughts?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I wrote it with Biden's visit. You know, Biden's meeting in mind about this. Well, what Newsom did was a roadmap of what not to do, which is you don't raise human rights, and that you do solely focus on climate change, which is an important issue, but we have other issues that we want to get on the table as well. And that you don't screw up things like we've done in the past. I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger wanted to make nice with China and so built the San Francisco-Oakland Bay Bridge with Chinese steel, destroyed thousands of job opportunities on the West Coast, and they got a crappy bridge. So that ought to be a lesson for President Biden and everybody else as we move forward, is that you literally get what you pay for here, which is not a good deal
right.
for workers or for the economy or for our security.
Scott, as always, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Of course, Rick. Great to be with you as always.
Our good friend Scott Paul. Make sure you check out their website, AmericanManufacturing.org. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1938. That was the day that the National Federation of Telephone Workers was founded in New Orleans, Louisiana. Today, the union is known as the Communication Workers of America and represents 700,000 workers in a wide range of communication fields. Attempts to organize the telephone industry began as early as 1910 by the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. By the end of the decade, the IBEW had more than 200 telephone unions. Growth in the number of union members in the telephone industry was greatly impeded due to World War I. During the war, President Woodrow Wilson issued an order to, quote, hereby take possession and assume control and supervision of each and every telegraph and telephone system and every part thereof within the jurisdiction of the United States. He placed control of the industry under the authority of the Postmaster General. After the war ended, telephone companies increasingly installed company unions as a way to control their workers' organizing efforts. Their aim was to stave off unionism from outside organizations. Nearly all of the IBEW locals lost their membership to company unions. But when Congress passed the Wagner Act in 1935, a new surge of independent unionism began in the telephone industry. In 1938, 31 organizations joined together in New Orleans to form the National Federation of Telephone Workers. It was a loose association of locally independent unions. But by 1947, it became clear that the union would have to form a strong national presence to negotiate with the nationwide companies. And the Communication Workers of America was born.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You know, today you heard the big fight, the big almost fight. You know, Mark Wayne Mullen going to go after Sean O'Brien. But you also didn't hear about Sean Fain, who testified before the committee hearing today, talking about the wages, the benefits, all of the things that the UAW was able to accomplish and how, you know, transforming the auto industry back into one of prosperous jobs is a focus. Didn't hear that. No. But there was a little Reuters story about Hyundai. Evidently, Hyundai has said that they're going to boost wages of their hourly workers by 25% by 2028. Because guess what? they get it. They get the fact that their workers are paid much less than the UAW members. And could be an attractive target. This is what I've talked about numerous times over the years. When we had a union density rate of 35%, 35% of the workers in this country were making good wages, family-sustaining wages with health care and retirement. And 35% of the workers who weren't in unions were getting just about the same thing, which meant you had a broadly prosperous working class. Now we're down to 6% in the private sector. And what do you how do you think that goes across the economy? I think, as Sean O'Brien's testimony pointed out, CEO pay up over 1,200% over the last couple of decades, worker pay 15%. Gee, I wonder who has a contract and who doesn't. Let's go to the phones. Got Alice on line one. Alice, how are you today?
Semi-coherent.
That's better than insane. All right. We're on the right path.
Okay.
What's going on?
Well, the reason why I wanted to call was, to remind everybody that come December 1st, you're not going to be on here. You're going to be on TV. And to ask you to tell us what time the show will be on, because you said it's changing to going to be a one-hour program.
Currently, we're on at 9 p.m., much like, you know, we are in our terrestrial view. In the new year, there's talk of moving us to 7 in the morning and then a repeat at sometime at like 5 o'clock in the afternoon. They are still putting that together, and it's the reason I haven't given out the definitives yet, because don't really have it all in place. But that's what's being discussed right now, is that's where we are.
Okay. All right, then. So I thought I would ask, so I would know, and so would everyone else.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Have a good evening, Rick.
Thanks, Alice. Look, at the end of it, you know, we are ticking down to the end of our time on live terrestrial radio. As I've said, we're going to be offering the audio from the TV show to all of our affiliates. Many of them are going to pick it up, so you'll get the hour of audio for terrestrial radio, which we're happy about. And look, you know, I like the interactivity, and we're talking about some new possibilities and some new things of having this kind of interaction on a certain level. Again, there's so many exciting opportunities that everything's hitting on all cylinders right now, and we're looking forward to the new year and the new format, and, you know, the jump to, you know, being, a focus on television. And I've said it before, radio has been my passion for all these years. It's just that there's nowhere to grow where we are. There's no more growth in this side of things. And it goes back to, I look at, our time at the Teddy Roosevelt inaugural site. And, the fact that the moneyed interest controlled virtually everything in that era, kind of like you have today. It's hard to go against the corporate narrative. It's hard to go against what the moneyed interests want. And this is where, the free speech folks have given us, complete editorial control over whatever we want to do. There's no input from them whatsoever on what we focus on or what we talk about. And I would never agree to that. They're giving us the opportunity to really use the brand and to expand our reach in ways that we've been wanting to do for a while. And that, unfortunately, as much as I love radio, we just don't have the ability. We're in 50 markets across the country. And that's being politically where we are is incredible. It puts us in the top, two or three programs in the country. But going to TV is going to put us in every home in the country. Free speech is everywhere. We're in the hotel and I flipped on the TV and it was actually on. And it's one of those things where you see this and you go, yeah, we're making the right choice. This is where we need to be. And the talk is to expand into some other ideas as well. I've thrown out the idea of a live Saturday, call-in kind of thing, which, unheard of on TV. So we've thrown out a bunch of ideas, and there's going to be some really good opportunities coming out of this. So thank you, Alice. I appreciate it. But more importantly, check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. We will be posting all of that stuff as it comes up. So even after December 1st, when we We turn off the live mics. There will be information. Subscribe to the podcast. Always going to be there. And we're going to do some additional, you know, specifically content related stuff for podcasts. So we're looking forward to the new year, and I hope you'll come with us. But you know, the ricksmithshow.com, that's where you'll find information as it pops up. But again, thank you, Alice. Gonna take a quick break, right back. Stick around.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.